Monday, August 2nd, 2010. This is the Sales Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Castain, with YourSalesPlaybook.com. And today we're going to tackle one of the most misunderstood ingredients in the sales process, this whole subject of rapport building. Now, I say misunderstood because now, while we understand how important it is and how people buy from people they like and people who they trust, we tend to sort of oversimplify this whole rapport building thing by thinking things like, well, it's about looking around the office, right? And seeing pictures or things that I can use to kind of bond with the prospect. Or maybe it's being a good schmoozer or maybe good at the chit chat. Now, there's really so much more to that. In fact, there's actually so much more than that that I could not possibly tackle it all in this podcast and keep it at a respectable time frame. So anyway, knowing that it's a Monday morning and I want to get this to you as quickly and concisely as possible, I've broken it down to really what I call the six judgments of rapport. In other words, there are six things that people can continually judge others on. So just by way of a quick list, I'm going to throw them at you, then we're going to go back and spend some time on each one and give you lots of tips today. Today is one of those days that you're going to want to have a pen and paper handy and jot these things down. If you keep a journal, man, this is a great place to put something like this. So here are the six areas that we are judged on. You ready? Here goes. One, how you look. Two, how you act. Three, what you say. Four, how you say it. Five, where you say it. And six, with whom you say it. So those are the areas. Let's jump right in. The first thing that I mentioned, how you look. Now, you've heard this before. This is no major revelation, but people usually judge with their eyes first. So what does your visual image say about you? Now, again, right about now, you might be thinking, here comes the dress for success speech. Well, that is part of it, right? We do have to dress for success. Whatever success in their industry looks like, it's not just about yours. Maybe you're casual and they're formal. You really want to dress to their industry and be a step above and just try to be very, very professional. But it is so much more than that. And again, I'm not going to even really get into that whole aspect. But I'm going to tell you that I've seen people that looked impeccable in their dress. They looked phenomenal. You and I would look at them and say, I want to look like them. But they blow it on the details. Things like the pad that they're writing on, instead of maybe a portfolio. And I'm not saying you have to go out and spend $500 on something, but I mean, they're writing on a pad with all the pages looking just horrendous, like it was dragged through the mud or like some kind of a crappy spiral or whatever. Things like that. And I remember Dad was funny about this stuff because he taught me a lot about sales. You've heard me talk a lot about him. Big, big influence in my life. And he used to say to me, because I used to push back on this stuff, like, you know, like, don't they have anything better to do than judge me on this or judge me on that? And he said something very interesting that I want to really communicate to you. He said that you don't want anything that distracts from your main thing. So whatever your main message is, we want them paying attention to things that do not serve you. So again, if they're staring at that pad or they're looking at that pen that maybe you were like nibbling on the pen cap, and you might laugh at this and you might say, who the hell would do this? But I'm telling you, I wouldn't be bringing it up if I haven't seen it extensively in the field. So things like that. How about the bag that you use, the computer bag? That was something I screwed up on, man. I had the whole dress for success thing down, looking good. Never was on the cover of GQ, but man, I had it together. But then one time one of my coworkers, actually a few of them, I think they were doing like an intervention. They sat me down and they said, I don't think you're aware of it, man, but your bag looks like it was through World War III. And it's just horrible, man. It looks, go out, get a bag. So, you know, things like that are a distraction. So, but let's get beyond that. Let's get beyond the dress for success thing. How about your marketing materials? From your business cards to your website. Do they communicate the best you possible, or do they distract from the message? Are we getting away from that main thing that we talked about before? How about networking events? You're going out there, right? You're trying to meet people. and yet you don't look approachable. This is one of those things, too, that I made the mistake on. I mean, I remember going to networking events, and this is a true story. I cannot make this stuff up. And people would come over to me and ask me if I was pissed. Because I guess I had that look on my face. And I remember thinking to them, because I am a bit of a smartass coming from New York, well, you know, I wasn't pissed until you came over, but now I am. But the problem was, folks, is that I didn't look approachable. And I just had this continual expression on my face, like I was annoyed or aggravated or whatever. But meanwhile, inside, man, I was cool. But it just was not conveying the proper message. Now, this is a good time for us to pause. As I teach you each one of these six judgments, you need to understand something else. And it's an incredible concept that you really want to own. And it's the concept of being congruent. And what congruent means, or being congruent means, is that all of these areas that you and I are being judged on need to align. They need to be saying the same thing. So in this case, right, on the inside, I thought I was cool. And the words I was saying, I thought, you know, we were fine and people seemed to be accepting me. But my visual appearance was telling people something very, very different, and at the very least, it was distracting from the main message. Now, let me just give you one ridiculous example, if I may. Brace yourselves, put on your seatbelt, but sometimes it just takes a real stupid example to get the point across. I want to beat up the point a little bit for you. Let's just say that you follow my blog. I hope you do, right? And you like my podcast, and you find out I'm going to be at like a local chamber of commerce out your way, and you want to go there and see me, right? You'd make my day if you did. So you're going out there, and you want to see Paul Castain do a presentation. They introduce me, and what I want to communicate, and then I'm going to actually tell you how I would do it, let's just say I want to be like every other speaker and tell you how happy I am to be there, right? Doesn't every speaker usually do that? Nobody ever tells you that they'd rather be home, right? But I want to tell you how happy I am to be there and how privileged I am to be in your company. So I get out there instead and I say, thank you. I am so happy to be here. Now, that's my verbal. It sounds like I'm going to fall the hell asleep, right? It's like, would you just like come over to him and you want to like, you know, like when they're jump-starting somebody who like is dying on the operating table, it's like, clear, boom, give this guy some personality, wake him up. My message is going off. Now, the other thing too, what if my visual message, while I was saying how happy I was to be there and putting you to sleep, I was giving you all a finger? Again, I told you it was going to be a crazy example, but would you believe that I wanted to be there? Well, not only would you probably not believe me, but several of you would probably smack me around for giving you the finger. At least that's how we do it back in New York. But here's the point. I'm being ridiculous. You might say, man, this guy's an idiot. Let me shut off this podcast. But you do it every single day. When these six areas that I'm about to teach you are not in alignment and you are not being congruent. So, by way of a crazy example, please remember that that is exactly what happens when you don't have that alignment. So let me give you a quick action step, all right? And the action step is this. I want you to do kind of a visual message checkup by doing a presentation maybe in front of your peers. If you're fortunate enough to have a coach, do it in front of your coach. If there's someone on your team that just is great at getting their visual message across or whatever it is, have them sit in and give you some feedback. And sales managers, one of the best investments that you could make. And I'm telling you, you will literally thank me for this thing if you're not doing it. It's really, they've come down in price. Get a video camera, get a digital camera, and videotape these presentations that you do perhaps in your conference room, in your sales meetings. And it's amazing because I have been public speaking for years. I have a lot of practice. I worked for an organization that is world renowned for their public speaking ability, but I had no idea of how everything was aligning or not aligning until someone videotaped me. Also, too, as a side note, I had no clue how freaking bald I was from the back until somebody videotaped me. So, guys, if you really want to get a good look at how freaking bald you are, man, do that one, too. So that's something that you can do. And then finally, just another note on this visual image thing. Take a good look at, you know, when you meet with prospects, do you look capable? Do you look trustworthy? Do you look believable? And give some thought to your brand. What is it that you want to convey to people? What do you want them to say about you behind your back? And make sure that your visual message speaks to that. Let's go on to item number two. I think I beat up item number one quite well. Thank you. Let's go to item number two, which is how you act. Again, I want you to think about that brand and what you want to stand for and be associated with. Now, what actions would you need to take or maybe even stop doing to communicate the best you possible? Now, sales reps, do you act like a client's best friend only when they have a check in hand? Right? I've seen some people do that. I've had people sell to me that have done it. I bet you I probably did it once or twice when I was desperate. We all do some stupid things, but you got to think about that. Now, do your actions undermine your words? So some action steps. Again, model the actions of those who get the results you want. Life can be very, very simple if we don't continually try to reinvent the wheel. If there is somebody in your organization or outside of your organization that is getting the results, model it. How do they act? Model that behavior. It's something that can be duplicated. Don't ever forget that. Next, ask your questions why they buy from you. And find out specifically what you can do more of. Again, that has to do with your actions. Maybe they love you because you say Thursday and it's always Wednesday, or that they can take it to the bank, so to speak. But then what you also have to find out is what you need to be doing less of. Maybe there's some points of improvement in there. Again, we're all works in progress. We got to be willing to take the lesson. And when you don't get a deal and that prospect goes with someone else, find out why. And one thing I've always said, mostly on these podcasts, and I'm going to say it again, probably right now or whenever you have these conversations with people, finding out about what you could be doing more of or less of, that's a great time to tell your ego to go wait in the car. Because the biggest thing that can get in the way of our development is the ego. So don't ever forget that either. Next, we're up to item number three, what you say. Now, I want to ask you a question. You ready for this? And you don't have to answer because you'd probably look really stupid in your car talking to the CD player or whatever it is, or in your office or whatever. So my question for you, kind of a rhetorical question, if you will, who is your biggest competitor? And being that I don't know you, I can pretty much, within a certain degree of accuracy, guess that it's probably not the guy up the street or the company that's doing work for the company you're trying to get into right now. And maybe not even, dare I say, the company that's willing to cut your throat for a nickel and do that job a nickel less. You and I are actually competing for the attention of a decision maker who has way too many things on their plate and way too many distractions. So that really brings us to a bit of a million-dollar question, if you will. You ready for this? Are you compelling enough to make it through all of that noise? And I'm going to tell you something. If you take the time to look at your messaging and how compelling you are, I can pretty much tell you that you will be ahead of your competition by probably 99% of them, because most people like you and I are just too darn busy to stop and take a look at our messaging. So what I'd like to do for now, because there's just so much to each one of these six things that I'm talking about, but I want to keep it to a respectable time limit again, I want to invite you to take a good look and a thorough listen to the following messages that you send out. First of all, when someone asks you what you do, what do you say? Now, some people call this their elevator speech, or they call it your 30-second commercial, and I've got news for you. You do not have 30 seconds. Don't kid yourself. People are far too busy, and they are very, very quick to in fact, I've been reading a lot of Jill Conrath's things lately, and in her book, Snap Selling, as a matter of fact, fantastic book, you have to check it out, she calls it the D-zone, and we've got to be very careful of getting into the D-zone. The D-zone is when you have these prospects and clients too, by the way, that are just so distracted that you could easily get deleted. Your message can get deleted or disregarded. And then she says, from there, you could be done. And really going a step further than that is that if you're done enough times, You're going to be dead as a sales professional. So I want you to give some thought to that, but there's more. Not just your quick response to, you know, what is it that you do and tell me about your company. What is your extended presentation look like? So if you were to come in and do a presentation, are there some basic things that you go over? Is there a PowerPoint that you do? What does that look like? Maybe take a look at that. When you need to leave a voicemail, what's that message look like? Do you have it scripted out? When was the last time you really listened to what you leave as far as a message? How about the voicemail on your office phone or on your sales phone? By far, one of the most neglected pieces of messaging that I've seen, that we're more conscientious about the message we leave than the message that people call into. I mean, if you're compelling enough and they call you back and you sound like Mickey Mouse, you ain't going nowhere. So that's something to think about as well. How about your introductory email? What does your messaging look like there? So a couple of other action steps for you and some tools. One, you've heard me say this before, one of the best investments, man, you can get them for like $25 or $30 now. You don't have to go crazy. Get a digital recorder. And again, if money is tight, the other thing that you can do, most cell phones now have a recording device on there. So when you're making some of your outbound calls, one of the best pieces of advice I can give to you is tape your end of the conversation. Be careful about taping the whole thing. There are laws about that and everything. And I would stick to your end of the conversation. And here's a very cool concept to think about. Sports teams always watch the videotape. They're looking at the plays. They're seeing where they were in peak performance states and when they were doing all the right things and all the right moves, and they were analyzing their team as well, and they get better from the experience. Why wouldn't you do that in sales? So think about that as well and tape your end of the conversation. Next, the other thing that you can do, and this is a great warm-up for you before you get on the phone every day. Again, athletes warm up. I'm a musician. I always warm up before I pick up the guitar. Why don't you warm up as a sales professional? And one of the ways you can warm up is you can call your own voicemail. Listen to it as a prospect would. And one of the coolest things I love about taping myself is that, and I know you guys go through it too, all of us hate the sound of our voice when it's recorded. So we're going to be a little harsher on ourselves. So please think about that as well. And here is my final bit of advice for you. Become a student of packaging. And what I mean by that is pay attention to how people package their words, how they describe things, how they describe things in your business or services you offer or a competitive edge that you bring to market, and duplicate that. And a quick story for you. Years ago, I went on this appointment, and it was one of those appointments that was going too well. We've all been there, right? It was going great. I was getting superstitious, man. I knew something was like not completely on the level here. And I was sensing like a disturbance in the force, if you will. And the lady turns to me. This was in New York City, by the way. And my office was out on Long Island. It is about an hour train ride. And she says to me, "Paul, love your company, love your pricing." And I'm thinking to myself, man, I got it all. They love me, my company, the pricing. Let's do this, right? I'm already mentally spending the commission check. And she says, "But you're just too damn far away." Now, I don't know about you, and this is a confession, right? And I probably shouldn't say this, and it's probably going to kill me later on when I want to run for political office or something like that. But I have never been good at responding to something that I think is just such a stupid statement to make. I'm thinking, what the hell is this, like the 1600s or something? Like Long Island, you fall off the edge of the world, and like on a map it would say dragons lie here or something like that. What the hell was that? I didn't know what to say. But this old salesman that came along with me literally kind of like put his hand across me. He was like, "I got this one, son." He didn't say that, but I think that's what he was thinking. And he said, "Don't worry. We have a battery of messengers." He said, "Don't worry, we have a battery of messengers, and we got the deal." So we're on the train, and I turned to him, and I said, "When in the hell did we get a battery of messengers?" He said, "We don't have a battery of messengers." And I'm thinking, yeah, I know we don't. We're screwed. And he goes, no. The messenger service we use has a battery of messengers. That was, again, it was how he chose to package it. So guess what I did? I wrote it down in my journal, and the next time somebody gave me pushback on how far away I was. I said, don't worry, I have a battery of messengers, and I made like it was mine all along. So that's something that I want you to do. And that, if you keep a journal, man, you got to write this stuff down. You're in a meeting, you hear somebody say something, steal a damn phrase. If you hear me say something, steal the phrase, but become a package of a package. Become a student of packaging. So my packaging there was pretty bad. All right, so let's move on to the next one. Item number four, and we're going to kind of go through this one quickly so that we can be respectful on the time, how you say something. And Tony Robbins said something very interesting on one of his cassette tapes, and I thought about whether or not I wanted to say this to you now because I'm afraid I could offend some people. So let me just give you a quick warning. What I'm about to say could be offensive. I'm very, very sorry. Hopefully it won't be too bad. But Tony Robbins says there's a huge difference between me saying to you, again, it's going to be the same words in both cases. If I go over and go, you know, you son of a bitch, versus me going over and smiling and saying, you son of a bitch. It's the same phrase, but one of them, a comedian, will say to you, and you'll laugh. You might spit out your beer. You're laughing so hard. Imagine Chris Rock or Eddie Murphy or somebody saying this to you. You might really laugh. But if I say it with the wrong tonality, you might kick me through a window. But here's the deal, right? It's the same sentence. So what makes it different? Well, it's all those verbal, nonverbal cues that we throw into it that makes it so. But the problem is that the world has moved more electronic. I'm certainly a big advocate of a lot of things online. A lot of you see me on LinkedIn. You read my blog. And what those things cannot convey sometimes is the proper tone. So I want you to be very, very mindful of that. And how you're coming across. In fact, there was a book that was written, and they mentioned something very, very interesting. This book, I think, was called Crucial Conversations. And again, they said that in email, we lose that rich stew of verbal and nonverbal communication. So you really want to be very, very mindful of that. And last but not least, when you're saying something to someone, you can have the greatest words in the world. You can have the greatest packaging that we just talked about. But if you lack energy, you lack excitement, you lack passion for what you do, well, then we're getting back to that concept of being incongruent, and you never want that to happen. So please give some thought to that and be very mindful. Let's go to item number five, where you say it. Now, as much as you Google a prospect, as much as you Google their company, I think it's safe to assume that they are going to Google you. So, with that in mind, you've heard me say this before, are you in fact Googleable? In other words, are you leaving a footprint in the space that speaks or that your personal brand speaks to? Let me give you an example. Let's say I want to sell to the training industry. Then I need to be showing up at places like ASTD and organizations like SHRM. I'm giving you lots of little initials, right? How about on LinkedIn? Do you belong to groups, but do you belong to the right groups? I'm going to pick on the printing industry really, really quickly, if you will. If I do it any lengthier, then I may not have a job at the end of this podcast, but I see this a lot in the printing industry. I'll talk to people all the time, and I'll coach them, and I'll say, well, you're on LinkedIn. And they'll say, yeah, and I'll say, well, okay, that's one good gold star for you, but are you involved in some of the groups? And they'll say, yeah. And I'll say, well, wonderful. What groups? And they will name printing groups only. Now, that's great to keep your finger on the pulse and understand what's going on in your industry. But unless you're a trade printer, how much printing is another printer going to buy from you? Why would you spend all of your time there with your message? So you could have the greatest message in the world. People could take a vote right now and say, you have got the best message, but you're saying it in the wrong spot. So I want you to keep that in mind, that you should be getting your messages at the right places, the right organizations, the right trade associations. Get out there and get branded with the proper image and the proper messaging at the proper place. So that's very, very important to you. So let's move on. I think a major trap that you want to avoid with regard to kind of where you say things, I call it the when in Rome trap. And I see this a lot. Let me give you an example. Let's just say, and I know that I'm getting extreme, but this happens a lot. Let's just say that you know for a fact that your client loves to talk politics. And again, I have a very firm view on that. I don't care if they have my same view or not. I don't do it. I don't engage in it. I don't care if I get somebody really mad at me for doing it. I won't do it. I need to keep my main thing the main thing. And my main thing is not my politics. It's not my religion. It's not my firm beliefs and things that don't speak to my brand. So, but let's just say that I violate that rule because I know my client is, you know, a big time Republican, and he loves or she loves to talk, you know, Republican things with me and bash people that are liberal. Now, let's just say two cubicles away, there is somebody who is a tried and true liberal. Do you think maybe I could lose some points with them? And it's a small world, and life is funny. They may influence that decision. People come and go in organizations. We've seen it all the time. My contact could be out. That person could be in. And again, it goes back to what my dad said. At a minimum, we have a distraction. I need to keep my main thing the main thing. Let's go to the last item. Item number six, with whom you say it. So who do you friend online? If you think about Twitter and you think about Facebook, could that speak to your brand? Could that speak to, or at least give something for somebody to judge you on? Sometimes the company that you keep and, again, who you associate with. Who do you hang out with at work? What types of clients do you do work for? There might be a particular vertical that I'm trying to get into. Somebody might ask me, well, what work have you done in the industry? These are things that will play into someone's judgment. So keep that in mind. And again, you want to be very, very deliberate with that. Now, one final point in this area, and then I'm going to wrap it up. Within the prospect's organization, have I had an opportunity to communicate not only with my prospect, not only if my prospect isn't the ultimate decision maker, have I communicated at the highest level? But again, don't forget the biggest thing that we miss as sales professionals is communicating with the people that actually feel the pain. It's not just the person signing the check, not just the person at the 30,000 foot level. If you think, again, I am not here to disrespect someone at the 30,000 foot level, but if you think they have the same grasp on the day to day as the person actually in those trenches, you are definitely not having all the elements in place that you need to, again, to put forth the best you at that account. So I want you to keep that in mind. And again, by way of kind of wrapping up a few quick things, I want to leave you with an assignment. I want you to carve out some time ASAP. You really got to do it within the next 24 to 48 hours before life kind of gets in the way and you kind of forget about this. What I want you to do is take each of these six steps. I want you to give thought to how you communicate the best you possible within those steps. What's cool about this is that when you start doing that, this is what personal branding is all about. I mean, you could really tie in the rapport aspect as well as the personal branding in these steps. They really speak to personal branding. How do you get the best you out there? And think about it. And you cannot spend enough time on this. What is the message? What is my visual Paul Castain going to be? What is my verbal Paul Castain going to be? What are some of the words that I'm going to use? Maybe there's some key phrases that I'm going to use. So those are some things that I want you to really think about. And then I want you to challenge yourself to create an action step for each one of these things. Maybe an area where you can get better, something that you're going to do, again, within 24 to 48 hours before life gets in the way. And finally, this is huge. Let's get back to that concept of being congruent and not being incongruent. Make sure that all of the six areas are continually in alignment with each other, because here's what's going to happen, folks. If my messaging is out of alignment with each other, again, my verbal is saying one thing, my vocal is saying another thing, my visual is saying yet another thing, and I'm saying it somewhere else that's saying another thing about me, what's going to happen is we disconnect. And when we disconnect, we're actually, in this case, going to disconnect at a much deeper level, at more of a subconscious level. And what happens then is, and you've probably had this, where you just get more of a gut feeling about someone, but you don't know what it is about them. We've all been there. And what happens when you get to that place? You avoid them. And maybe that's when you stop hearing from people, or they go MIA on you and they don't call you back. So I want you to really, really think about it. And the opposite of this is true too. If we get these things in alignment, and you can really give a lot of thought to these six areas where you're judged, you're going to connect at a much deeper level, certainly a much deeper level than me looking around an office and seeing that, oh, you like golf? I golf too. And you could avoid a horrible trap. What if the person borrowed that office? Their office is a sty and they borrow that office and they say, actually, I hate golf. This is my boss's office. What do you say? Oh yeah, me too. How the heck do you recover from that? But anyway, that's a topic for another day. There you have it. A different take on rapport. I'm Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com. I'm inviting you to visit the website at www.yoursalesplaybook.com. You must stop by our LinkedIn group, Sales Playbook, growing rapidly. Lots of discussions, lots of cool people there. A lot of people just very free with giving ideas and tips and sharing resources. So you need to stop by there. And most of all, I'm wishing you an awesome week ahead. Go get them.